So, Cilla Blackstead. Did you know this? Are you surprised that she's dead?
I think you're making it up by the look on your face.
No, Cilla Black is actually dead.
Why are you laughing? Someone just died.
I know. It is very inappropriate.
Is she really dead?
She died like an hour ago.
Oh, why didn't you tell me sooner?
Because I wanted to break it to you in the cold open.
This is devastating.
Yeah, but I also wanted to use the word surprise in telling someone about her death and asking.
Is it maybe a little bit tasteless?
It's so tasteless. And I tweeted about the fact that I wanted to make a surprise pun about her death. And it's definitely too soon because she is entertainment royalty.
I mean, she's quite old though, so
72.
Well, there you go.
And sang. Everyone forgets that.
Is this a timely death? Is this what's known as a timely death in the media?
I think that
if she'd been 60, it would have been untimely. So is it timely yet?
At what point does a death become untimely?
Well, it's untimely if it's like anything before 70, I'd assume. But
she's 70 then.
From 70 onwards, it's a sort of
she's lived a fulfilled life.
Had a good innings.
Hosted two prominent television shows.
Sang with the Beatles as well.
She sang with the Beatles.
Yeah, there's videos on YouTube of her singing with the Beatles.
Hello, this is The Right Dishonourable.
It is, yes. It's not, in fact, an arts and culture show.
No,
for BBC Three.
My name is Jazza.
My name is Jimmy.
And we talk about politics and social issues in the UK and around the world every week on this podcast. Which is nice, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good spiel.
Yeah, good spiel.
Very, very polished.
Incredibly so. This week, we are going to be talking about, as always, three topics lasting usually no more than 45 minutes. And the first one is going to be Lord Saul, who's now everybody's favourite kind of pervy uncle who happens to have a title.
In the text Jazza sent to me, that cocaine lord guy.
Yeah.
Which is probably what he's going to be known as forever now.
I really hope so. I mean, Lord Coke wasn't... sounds like an actual name
Lord
of somebody.
Lord Sewer sounds, you know... I feel that's a fairly good effort.
The sewer hasn't been kind of... A sewer hasn't been involved in this whole controversy.
That is disappointing from a pun point of view.
So we're going to be talking about Lord Saul. If you haven't heard, he's a lord in the UK who has... basically being caught very, quite literally, with his pants down and snorting cocaine off of hookers' breasts.
I mean, that's, you know, if you're going to snort cocaine and be caught doing it, you might as well do it off a hooker's...
I mean, the phrase, go hard or go home, kind of rang true here. But that's going to be our first topic. Second of all, we're going to talk about Operation Stack and the swarms of migrants.
That's David Cameron's phrase.
Not our phrase. You can't see the quotation marks that I'm putting around the word swarm. So we're going to be talking about the fact that there are a number of illegal migrants in the French port of Calais who are currently trying to illegally get through either the Channel Tunnel or onto ferries going to the UK for a better life. I'm going to talk about that for a little bit. And then finally, we're going to talk about Cecil.
Oh yes, Cecil the Lion, who was shot by a Minnesotan dentist. Whose name is...
Wait for it.
Is Walter Palmer. I actually remembered it.
Yeah.
We're reading this off the Daily Mail, so, you know, slight warnings as to factual content. But, you know, is it bad that he shot the lion? Was it unfair? Was it unsporting? Does this say something about our society that we become so concerned about a lion when so many people are suffering more? That was a bit mawkish, wasn't it?
That was a bit more. But those are the topics that we're going to be talking about this week. Here's some music, and then we'll start talking about them. I really need to figure out how to transition into the music easier.
After the break?
It's not a break!
So Lord John Saul, is it Saul or Sewell?
Sewell.
Let's go with Saul.
That coked up Lord guy.
The guy who we'll be referring to as Lord Coke from now on in this podcast was caught in a sting operation by The Sun on Sunday, who hired two prostitutes to film him snorting what is alleged to be cocaine. I assume the journalists at The Sun would maybe know a thing or two about that.
It was probably cocaine.
It was probably cocaine.
And let's retract that comment about journalists at the Sun. Terrified of them.
Yeah, that's okay. It's all right. You can blank that out. You can blank that out, can't you?
Yeah.
Anyway, Lord Sewell was caught snorting what is almost certainly cocaine off the breasts of a prostitute.
And also gloriously, an image was taken of him wearing a studded leather jacket from one of the prostitutes
and
a bright pink bra.
Is it pink bra?
He looked glorious.
And this is a 69-year-old man who has a wife and four kids, according to his Wikipedia page. Yeah. So you obviously feel that, you know, he's done himself quite well out of this then.
I mean, in certain circles, he's definitely got bragging rights.
I mean, this is actually the response from all my friends who aren't that interested in politics. It's like,
they're just like,
it's like lad, you know.
Hashtag lad.
But since he was stung, he's since resigned. Has he... So he's no longer a lord then? He's no longer a peer?
I think he technically is still a lord, but he doesn't sit in the lords.
Right, okay. But I think there is talk of disennobling him.
I don't know. So I haven't actually seen anything suggesting that. I think that is ridiculously difficult to do, and they'd just rather him bugger off and not...
So anyway, there's various kind of angles you can look at this. Like, is this a public interest story? Because this guy claims £300 a day and in the past has claimed... £400,000 between 2001 and 2010. Mm-hmm. How much does the public conduct, the private conduct of a person relate to their public role?
Mm-hmm. So I've heard a lot of people say stuff along the lines of, I'm paying, my taxes paid for these prostitutes. And it's like, well, anybody who's in the public sector who then decides to do something that is vaguely unsavoury, you are paying for them to do that thing, essentially.
I mean, is it actually that different from had he gone and bought a load of booze, which I assume that most, you know, MPs and peers do spend some of their expenses on alcohol?
I mean,
is it that different?
They're just like yoghurty bags of alcohol.
There's even subsidised pubs within the parliament, right? There's like three of them.
Yeah.
So
the sports bar.
Is it actually any different from any of that, do you think?
No, not at all. But I do think that this in particular has kind of given people a reason to be pissed off that the Lords is full of just really horrific and unsavoury people. Because there are like 740 something Lords. It's the second largest chamber in the world.
Behind the Chinese.
Behind the Chinese People's Congress. And there are going to be over 800 after this new round of like Cameron being able to put in another.
So
like,
yeah, Cameron's appointing 40 more peers so that it more accurately reflects the proportions in the House of Commons.
Yeah, and the way that the Lords are appointed now just ends up being people who are yes men to the government who end up just kind of reaping the benefits of getting 300 cash a day.
So for those who are not familiar, the Lords performs a kind of editorial function on bills that go through the Commons. It's kind of...
It's the world's biggest editorial.
Yeah. It's a review chamber. And it used to be that you had to be, like, what I see as a proper Lord. So, you know, somebody who's, you know... I'm an anti-monarchist, so I feel like I can sort of say this and maintain some integrity, but... It's these days they're just appointed people like businessmen, scientists, what have you, who sit in the chamber, and there's still like 100 or so people from noble families who they're actually voted on.
Yeah.
Whenever somebody dies, another person has to be voted on to enter that pool of 100 or 150 or whatever it is. But I have to say, I'm not actually that bothered by the cocaine or prostitutes thing.
Really? But so you want an elected... Do you still want an elected Lords?
I'm not so sure about...
Or have you evolved on this issue, Jimmy?
What, like Obama?
Yeah.
So I don't think I've done a U-turn, but I'm not necessarily sure what the point of having another chamber elected from constituencies is, unless... I suppose the argument is, do you turn it into an American-style Senate where you pull different people from different regions. But I feel with what's happening in Scotland at the moment and what's happening in Manchester with the devolutionary thing, it's going to be very hard to actually get something through with any sort of coherence in terms of an elected lords.
Yeah.
And I also think there is an argument for having a chamber of experts, if you will.
So that's the idea that I really like, is the idea of having a load of people who have lived lives of worth. Sorry to everybody else who doesn't get appointed to the Lords. But who are experts in their particular field, whether that be science, whether that be education, international relations, academia, even some politicians, journalists. You might have a crack at it, Jimmy. It'll be great.
I'm not sure journalists are expert in anything.
Some of them are. But having that them as kind of like a review board for the kind of stuff that the government is putting through, and obviously law experts so that we can make sure that everything actually fucking works. I feel like there is a space for that, and that there is a very legitimate role for an unelected chamber in that kind of regard. And that's what I would like to see it do, rather than something that is region-based. I'd like to see it expert-based.
Well, I think if we are going to do that, you probably have to take away at least some of the control from the Prime Minister, who now appoints all of the Lords. Some of them are appointed on the advice of the opposition leader. It's purely advisory, though. The actual power rests with the Prime Minister. Maybe to an independent panel of some sort. I mean, I feel something like the Royal Society, which is the highest, is a body of scientists, basically, despite the name. They could sort of appoint the science component. Then you'd have a similar thing for education and so on.
We have 26 Lords Spiritual, for example, who are people from the Church of, like, bishops from the Church of England.
Yeah, it's the top archbishops and bishops.
Yeah, have the power that they have, but then also wield it in a very responsible way. I think that they wield it in a very responsible way, in that they kind of back off when they're like, this doesn't really have anything to do with us, do as you will. But then we'll use their influence in particular ways when it is particularly of interest to, like, the Anglican community. I would like to see equivalents of that for all of the major religions in the UK. So, as well as Anglican, having Catholic, Jewish, Muslim.
I'd prefer just to remove the religious component.
No,
but,
yeah. I think that they're an important thing. But anyway, that's another.
That's another.
Shall we get back to Lord Saul?
Do we think that he should have lost his job over this? Why is that?
You hate people losing their job when they fuck up, don't you? You just want to have a free pass to do whatever.
Is there a previous reference to this that I'm missing?
What's his name? The sexist professor.
Are you just pulling Tim Hunt into this?
Yeah,
have a go at me, sir.
I'm going to persistently hold that above your heads. You also didn't think that he should have lost his job.
Yeah, well, he just said something that offended people, so, yeah.
And Lord Saul has done stuff that actually hasn't offended a lot of people, but it probably shouldn't be something that somebody who gets, like, 500 quid just to turn up to work.
It's 300 quid.
To just turn up to work, and then gets to, you know, sniff some coke.
But to be fair, the way the expenses system works probably should be reformed, because some lords turn up, claim their 300 quid, go to the bar, and then just leave for the day, and they haven't really done anything, so it probably should be reformed. However, as it currently stands, once you have that money, it is actually yours to do what you want with.
Of course. And I think that is fine. But obviously, somebody like Lord Saul, who is going out and is that kind of a character, kind of... It makes me think that if they've been able to catch this guy, what about all of the other guys, and perhaps women? Ladies occasionally do enjoy a bit of the blow, I'm assuming. Is that coke is blow? I don't know anything.
I don't know anything.
But the unsavoury characters who are in that 700-strong chamber, of course there are some others who are just, like, foul individuals and have just been appointed there because they were perhaps a councillor in a region of the UK.
So would you describe Saul as foul because of what he's done in terms of the cocaine and the prostitutes?
I would, yeah. Yeah, he's not somebody that I'd like to kind of, like, go out with and have a pint.
Why is that? Because I think I might have said earlier, it's not that different from drinking, is it? Doing cocaine.
No, but I think that... Oh, God, you've put me in a spot now. He's just probably a bit of a twat, isn't he? Let's be fair. If you are paying women for sex and then putting on their bras and snorting cocaine off of their boobies...
I mean, this is a bit judgmental, isn't it? you know.
Yeah, no, probably, but fine. Like if you're not a kind of like a public servant, then sure, do what you want. If you work for RBS, maybe not RBS because we still own quite a lot of them. But if you own for like Goldman's, if you work for like Goldman Sachs and you enjoy sniffing cocaine off of ladies, like wobbly bits, then fine.
I don't see what the justification is for. I mean, at the end of the day, what I think is bad about what he did is that he cheated on his wife.
So I'm the opposite. I don't think that that is an issue. I think that his infidelity is not a particularly that doesn't interest me at all.
But I think it says far more about a person's character they'd be willing to cheat on their spouse than it does that they enjoy cocaine or like having sex with prostitutes.
So, but he's paying for sex, which is, I don't believe that paying for sex is actually illegal, but he's taking part in an underground society. That makes it sound like...
Well, some people have argued that the cocaine trade is a really vicious industry, and so much bad stuff happens. So you could argue that he shouldn't be supporting that industry.
Oh, and also cocaine is illegal. Cocaine is like a class A drug, I believe.
It is, but I actually don't think that cocaine should be illegal. So that's maybe why I don't care about that.
But he's still somebody who is partaking in like really quite high profile illegal activities while being a public servant. And that ain't cool. Whether or not you believe that prostitution should be legalized or cocaine should be regulated, he's taking part in those activities whilst they are illegal and incredibly damaging to a lot of people.
I mean, one of the best things about this scandal is, I don't know if you know about this, but a week before it broke, he wrote an article for the Huffington Post talking about ethical standards in the Lords and how they needed to be raised.
I believe he was on like the... He was... On a panel that was like ethics.
Yeah, he was on some sort of ethics committee as well. So that was great. That was good.
And so people like him end up getting appointed to the Lords because they will happily be yes men to whoever is in power at the time and will be the puppet of the lower chamber and just get stuff through. And we need fewer of those kinds of people and more people who are experts in their fields, more people who are representative of communities, and fewer people who are just chummy with the PM. Because that's who we get.
So we need to reform the Lords.
Yeah, we need to reform the Lords.
Saul probably should have lost his job and has lost his job, so that's fair enough. Mm-hmm. So is that this scandal over? Are we done?
I mean, the Tories don't want to reform the Lords because it serves them very well. And
Labour didn't reform the Lords as much as they could have, given that they had a huge majority under Blair.
And, like, massive mandate to do so. And then the Lib Dems tried to put a bill through where they would be elected on 15-year terms, which, like, love you, Nick Clegg, but that was ridiculous.
So what would you want? 5-10-year terms?
No, I would... So I would want there to be a retirement age or some kind of, like, vague retirement age, and then people get cycled out, essentially.
But isn't the argument that some people, their brains remain active and they can still contribute up until the age of 90?
Yeah, no, true. I don't know. I'm not an elected official, therefore haven't given too much thought into it. But I don't think that an elected lord on like a popular vote is the best way of going. I feel like appointees are the best, but it would need to be done by like an external body. You take away the power from the MPs, they're all tossers.
On that note, I think we can finish.
Yeah, good. Are you getting ready to go on holiday this year? Were you thinking of taking a lovely long weekend to perhaps Bordeaux, perhaps the south of France? Perhaps you were even thinking of having a nice drive down to Barcelona? Well, your plans are fucked. This is no longer able to happen because the migrants are coming and they're screwing with our external migration system. Basically, I'm quite bitter because I was meant to be going on holiday to Bordeaux and I was going to drive down and it was going to be lovely. And now I can't really. I'm going to have to fly and spend a ton of money.
That's tough, aren't
it? And it's all because of those 5,000 people staying in Calais trying to get on lorries.
They must feel really sorry for you having spoilt your holiday plans. You know?
I know, what dicks. Trying to escape poverty and repression by coming to the UK, and they haven't even thought about the fact that my holiday plans are going to be screwed.
It's sort of a microcosm for Western attitudes to the third world, really, isn't it?
I'll be allowed to call it the third world.
I'm running with it. I think it's fine.
Okay, yeah. Cool. I feel awkward. But in all seriousness, there are in recent months the number of illegal migrants and asylum seekers,
I believe the term is undocumented.
Undocumented. Okay, cool. Illegal. it's still I think legitimate here, but like people who are going to end up trying to seek asylum in the UK, they have kind of there's been particular media interest in this in the last couple of weeks because of a large number of them trying to get through either the Channel Tunnel or onto lorries to get through onto ferries that go across the English Channel to
the
UK.
The ferries has been less of a problem because there's been a strike in France, right?
Thank you, I mean, France.
There's always a strike in France, but the one this time was about ferries.
Yeah, this was a particular one. And this has resulted in Operation Stack, which has basically turned a lot of the M20, which takes you up to the Channel Tunnel, basically turned it into a car park for lorries. This has adversely affected the local economy and a lot of freight businesses as well.
So it's cost the haulage industry £750,000 a day is the figure that some industry body has given.
That's a load of money. Sorry, I just had a second there where I was really scared that we weren't recording. it's all a bit awkward because on the one end, I, as a consumer, want to be able to go on holiday, and I feel like these kinds of massive things shouldn't be disrupted, or should at least be handled in like a proper in a proper way by both the French and the UK authorities. But then also these individuals, I have an awful lot of empathy thought for, because they are trying to get out of really shitty situations that quite a lot of the time we've caused through terrible international relations.
I'd say caused is maybe a bit over-egging it, but certainly
I think quite a lot of Syrian refugees can directly blame us for the fact that their country has gone to shit.
I guess maybe we should go into that, because I don't think that there's certain elements of Middle Eastern policy that obviously relate to how the West has behaved,
mm-hmm.
but to some extent the Middle East is you know not great because of the internal politics and the, you know, different factions and all the rest of it, and just it's systemic instability, I guess.
Yeah, I think that Syria is our fault.
I don't.
Like overarching, well, good for you. I go to bed guilty every night.
That must be tough.
Yeah, no, yeah. it's really hard. I think we're going to have to pull out one of the hypothetical questions that we love on Right Dishonorable.
Can we do a prediction as well? Because we usually get those.
Yeah, we can do that.
On.
Yeah, yeah, good. If you were president of the world, how would you be dealing with this apparent migration crisis? And is it a crisis? Because 5,000 people in Calais ain't that many.
It's not really a crisis. I'm going to be a bit boring and go for the cause rather than the symptoms.
Yeah, but that's not going to stop people from trying to get on lorries right now.
It won't.
So obviously in the long term we do have to like cut it off at the root. But how do you kind of sort it out at the top? I'm really struggling with metaphors.
I guess you could just say, okay, we'll just grant asylum to these 5,000. That appears to be the figure. But then obviously if you do that, you then encourage more, because people will realise the UK has become more generous about granting asylum. So that maybe wouldn't deal with the problem. Or I guess you can invest more money in security, although a lot of people argue that doesn't really help, because these people are quite happy just to keep going until they eventually get through.
Yeah, and they will eventually get through or die trying.
So
I actually don't
think the immediate problem is solvable as such. I think the major problem is actually how Europe as a whole has dealt with migration from North Africa and the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just been a complete failure of diplomacy to actually deal with either of those issues in a coherent way, partly because of lack of military involvement in those areas. I mean, you partly put it down to previous military involvement, but the lack of military involvement now is certainly causing a problem. And also underinvestment in those countries as well, which is something that we should be sorting out, so that basically making their countries more attractive to live in would stop the migration crisis at our end.
Yeah, no, completely. But also right now, how do we should we be accepting these people or being more hardline and working with the French to send them back to where they came from?
I don't know that you can send them back to where they came from, but the other argument is that the UK isn't really pulling its weight as far as the settling of refugees and asylum seekers goes, which I think is probably
the
fair.
Fact that our government often holds up, and a lot of people in the UK hold up Australia as a legitimate person to emulate in terms of migration and asylum
and
seekers is quite depressing. Boat people.
Boat people. Well, I mean, what do you feel about it then? What do you think the UK should be doing right now?
Oh, I don't know. If it were me, I'd just be like, fuck it, let them come to the UK, let us assess their situations, and then go from there. If we decide that they are not, that we shouldn't be granting them asylum, then we either offer to take them back to their country, or we offer to find somewhere else for them to go. I think that would be a legitimate, immediate kind of response to it. But then we also we have the problem of it, that kind of leniency attracting more unregulated and illegal migration.
But I suppose the other argument is because of the things that are happening in North Africa, in Eritrea, Sudan, the Middle East as well, that however we behave, more people are going to come. Just because if the situation gets worse, their incentive to actually leave increases. And the fact that there's been so many that have successfully made it over to Europe as well is probably made it easier in some ways for
you look at the caliber of the people who have ended up getting to Calais. They've had to save up money, fork up a load of cash, risk their life to cross an ocean. Then they've basically walked the length of... I think we need more people like that in the UK, quite frankly. We like gumption in the UK. We like the stiff upper lip. If anybody's got stiff upper lips, it's these bastards, isn't it? I say bastards in an affectionate way.
I guess so, but there's also problems with integrating them in terms of finding them houses, getting them connected up to the healthcare services. There's a lot of, whatever the essence of their character, there's a lot of other problems and issues that you have with all migrants, but you particularly have with migrants from less well-developed countries, I guess.
How do you feel about our nation's attitude to migration in general and to immigration? Because I am often very embarrassed by the tone of the conversations that we have.
I think Britain is essentially in the process of converting itself to a more American way of actually viewing nationhood. We used to be a really homogenous country. We had, the British and the English and then the various Celtic nations as well. Mm-hmm. And that was seen as what being British was. Some people sort of look at the Commonwealth and say, oh, that was also being British, but because of the way racism worked, it didn't really work that way.
Expanded into the modern British kind of identity.
It's the
modern Britain that at least I feel the government wants us to identify with is the Britain that was kind of shown to the world in the 2012 opening and closing ceremonies, which is multicultural, highly educated, young, vibrant, musical.
I think there's a
Spice Girls.
This is quite a stereotypical view, but there's a lot of people that want to take the country back in terms of what it is ethnically and what it is culturally.
Yeah, but that just isn't possible, is it?
It isn't possible because there's a million Muslims in Britain now. Is it a million, 2 million?
So those not born in the UK are 13% of the population. And there's over a million Muslims in the UK as well.
And there's also lots of people whose parents come from different cultures who were born in the UK as well. We're in the process of actually converting into that sort of country. I think it's better for us economically. It's probably better for us culturally, although there are some problems and there are some drawbacks to that. But ultimately, Britain has always traded on its openness to the world. Obviously not
great seafaring nation.
Yeah, not in an entirely, well, not in a positive way quite a lot of the time, but that's the way that we're actually going to move forward in the 21st century. So yeah, that's sort of what we have to do, I see.
So that's Lord Jimmy, our benevolent leader.
Sir Jimmy.
Sir, you want to be a sir?
Well, Well, it's Sir Jimmy or Lord Nichols.
So oh, yeah.
That's how it works.
No, no, no. Okay.
Keep up.
I'm so sorry, I don't know how titles work.
You see the incompetence I have to work with every week. Fucking hell.
I'm really sorry. What do you guys think about the migration, quote-unquote, crisis in the UK at the moment between Calais and Dover? How would you deal with it? Let us know on social media. We're at Right Dishonour. And you can also leave us a comment on the website. We got one of them the other week. That was exciting, weren't it?
That was good, yeah. We all enjoyed it.
We did. I responded to it immediately. Jimmy tweeted, messaged me saying, we've got the first ever comment on the website. And we just had a little bit of a freak out. It was great. So if you could do something like that for us, that would be fine, right?
Yeah.
Good.
Or tweet us.
I said that.
Fuck. So last week, unfortunately, we lost Cecil the Lion from Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. When the ruthless dentist, Walter Palmer.
Ruthless? Well, you shouldn't have any roof.
No, ruthless.
Oh, ruthless. Okay.
Are you belittling me because of my accent? Is that what just happened there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, it happens to me an awful lot, so I thought I'd...
Well, you're from Essex, you deserve it. Anyway, the ruthless...
Let's get back to the lion, Jimmy.
The ruthless dentist, Walter Palmer... went out to Zimbabwe and shot the lion with a rifle from, did you say 200 yards?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that, from a long distance away. He didn't confront the lion, he didn't explain to the lion what was about to happen. He didn't soften the blow, you know.
I don't feel like you need to clarify that he didn't take on the lion one-on-one.
Well, if you see the photo of this guy, it's not all that surprising that he didn't take on the lion one-on-one.
Yeah,
I'm not
he's
sure.
He's got quite a shiny, round face.
Anyway, Twitter went mental and condemned him for killing a lion. There's also photos online of him killing other animals, including a rhino. Is that him killing the...
Is that... That's not Cecil.
That is Cecil, yeah.
That's Cecil.
Yeah. Looking quite sad.
Well, he's dead. We're looking at photos of dead animals.
And that's an elk as well.
Yeah,
deer,
buffalo, and yeah. So
he's killed lots of animals, but Cecil is the first one that really caused a stir. Jazza, why is it that Cecil caused such a stir on Twitter?
I mean, so he was a popular lion. He was kind of as close to being a celebrity lion as you can get in Zimbabwe. The Zimbabweans actually have reportedly been quite confused as to the international
interest
in this, and it is because of Twitter. Let's be fair. Because it ended up on page 5 of the local newspapers. oh, unfortunately, Cecil's dead. Sorry, guys. And then all of these eco warriors across the pond and in the UK just kind of lost their shit and were like, oh my God, you shot somebody. Just for the record, I think that if you cannot take the animal down, if you're not going to eat the animal, and if you're not able to wrestle the animal one-on-one, then you shouldn't be killing it. I think that those are quite nice things.
I mean, have you ever eaten a beef burger?
Yes.
Did you wrestle the cow yourself?
No, but I didn't just shoot the cow for... that's not the argument I'm making, Jimmy. The argument I'm making is that if you, as a person, are going to kill an animal, it should be fair. There should be a chance of you losing, or there should be a... the end goal should be consuming that animal.
But there is a serious point here in that this is one animal that happens to have been killed. It happens to be a relatively rare animal that's probably on the endangered species list, I'm guessing, or pretty close anyway. Whereas actually we have huge industries in the West that are dedicated to breeding and slaughtering animals for our consumption. So why is there so much interest in this one lion compared to the whole meat industry?
Because cattle aren't an endangered species, Jimmy.
They're not, but if you're talking about purely from a humane or humanitarian or cruelty sense, then, you know, this animal was just shot dead. Mm-hmm. There doesn't appear to have been any intimation that he suffered as such. He was just killed. So what's the big deal?
I think that the big deal is the fact that... I think it's just kind of drawn a lot of attention to the hunting industry. So these are... actual legitimate big industries in sub-Saharan Africa, where Western, like very often Western. The King of Spain was an example of a rich individual who ended up paying a lot of money to go and shoot some animals. There is still an industry here that does end up pumping a lot of money into, for example, the Zimbabwean economy and to local tourism. And it's kind of just made everybody aware that this is a thing. And it happens to, I feel like a lot of coincidence paths have crossed in terms of people on Twitter saw this thing and then it kind of blew up. I think it's chance, because there was a similar amount of condemnation when the then King of Spain, Juan Carlos, he shot an elephant,
yeah,
or something. And there was similar condemnation, but specifically within within Spain. And they were like, oh, for fuck's sake.
But that was more on lines in terms, because Spain was suffering recession at the time, and it was more an inequality thing rather than a, oh, aren't you a nasty guy for killing the animals thing.
Yeah, but it's a very loaded thing in terms of, like, white privilege, white people going over there and then killing a really popular wild lion in the country. There's a lot of stuff about guns and the obsession with hunting and the fact that a lot of people decide to go hunting and shooting animals, and they've literally, and especially in African big game hunting, they are basically, the other people do the tracking, they drive them up to the animal and then basically go, okay, point at it and shoot. And then they have this great photo where they have the dead animal at their feet and it's like, look how heroic I am for killing a buffalo. It's like, you did none of that work, you pulled a trigger on a gun. And it was kind of like the frustration of the pride that some people do have in taking part in this kind of stuff and saying, like, oh my god, look how badass I am by the fact that I, like, pulled a trigger.
But that seems to be, that seems to be quite a shallow reason for actually hating on this guy, to be honest.
So I think perhaps the hating on this guy isn't fair. He reportedly didn't know the identity of R. Cecil. And
so Cecil was a protected lion. He wasn't supposed to be game.
Yeah. And it also sounds like the guy who was running the hunt wasn't aware that Cecil was in.
I've heard that as well.
Lion as well. But he's basically going to get he's going to get charges brought against him because he ended up shooting one. Nobody cares if it was deliberate or not.
So do you think all hunting of this sort should be illegal then?
No, but it needs to be regulated properly, for fuck's sake. So it does bring in an awful lot into the local economy. I am sometimes hot and cold in terms of, like, hunting for sport. So I look at stuff like fox hunting, and I change my mind every couple of weeks.
But I would make the argument that the reason most people in the West eat meat is for enjoyment, and the reason people hunt is also for enjoyment.
Habit, I think, is more of a thing.
In terms of the eating thing.
Yeah, in terms of, like, why we eat.
But to me, it's the same argument from a moral sense. Like, I think most people in the West could survive without eating meat if they so chose. Mm. They just don't choose because they find it enjoyable to eat meat. And therefore, when there's this huge condemnation of, you know, hunting for sport, I sort of think it's a bit hypocritical, really. I'm aware that some people criticising are probably vegetarians.
So I think hunting for sport is fine if you end up eating the animal afterwards. Otherwise, you're just going around and shooting things. And you think that because you've killed the king of the jungle, the lion, that makes you a big man. Lion didn't have a bloody rifle. Like, he didn't stand a chance.
So we were suggesting before the podcast that we could set up some sort of gladiatorial arena where you're thrown into the arena with a knife and then you have to fight the lion to the death.
It'll be a bit like the Romans and the Christians, won't it?
It'd be a great TV show.
It'll be quite loaded. It would be a great TV show. Would be an amazing good TV show. I like this idea. I would like to also see some of the people who go on fox hunts in the UK try and fight a fox. I think that would be hilarious.
Do you not think most humans could beat a fox in a fight?
I don't think so. Have you seen the people who go fox hunting? They're very haughty-taughty.
Yeah, but, it's instinctive, isn't it? If you thought you were going to lose to a fox, your pride would kick in and,
Maybe, perhaps. Although I have, so in my local area, we used to have fox hunts with bugles and stuff back before it was banned.
So, have you been on a fox hunt before?
I haven't been on one, but they used to run through our garden like all the time, and it was more annoying than anything because it's like, oh, your dogs have just chat all over our front lawn. Great, thanks, guys. Cheers. And that's why I particularly was happy that they banned it, because the people who take part in that kind of activity usually don't particularly care whose land they're going over or who they affect. They say, this is my right to be able to hunt like an innocent animal, blah blah blah. I don't know,
but there is kind of an element whenever people talk about bunting hanning, it's just hunting, it's bunting hanning. banning hunting. I'm not sure what bunting hanging would be, but
sounds like a Hollywood actress.
It does, actually. But if it, when people talk about banning hunting, there's an element of class warfare going on there, isn't there? It's like, yeah, a fuck you to the rich.
Yeah. No, I think so. But I don't think that this guy who was a dentist was a particularly rich man. He's part of the US kind of like Bible Belt obsessed with guns kind of culture that see a photo of themselves shooting a rhino.
Isn't he from Minnesota? That's not in the Bible.
Is it not?
No, that's in the north of the country.
No, but the gun obsessed part of the US who see hunting as a legitimate pastime and as like something fun that they do, but then to go out and shoot big game in Africa, I think is particularly different because of the fact that they're hunting generally endangered species, even though certain numbers of that species are put aside for big game hunting.
Sure.
And also the apparent pride with which they parade around the fact that, oh, look, I shot this animal. It's like, you did nothing. You literally just got told where to point the gun and then pulled a trigger. Congratulations, you big, big man.
So if you guys have any views on this, do you think that we're maybe being a little bit lenient or too harsh about Walter Palmer here? Do you think that hunting...
I do think that Walter Palmer has been unfortunately victimized in this, because it isn't his fault that that is legal and that he's allowed to do that. But I think that the wider conversation of how we deal with particularly big game hunting in Africa, it's good that we're having it, but it's unfair that he particularly is being targeted.
But just because something's legal doesn't necessarily give you, you know, mean that you should do something, right?
No, but also he's not the only person on the face of the planet ever to do it, and the fact that people are picketing his business in Minnesota, I don't think is particularly fair. Do it that to every single American who's ever gone on a big game hunt ever, rather than just this one guy who happens by circumstance to have shot the wrong lion.
Isn't this just the way the media always works, though? It picks up like a totem for like a larger issue, and then that becomes the thing people fixate on.
You're probably right, but still not fair.
Still not fair. So if you agree with Jazza, disagree with Jazza, if you have any thoughts, leave them on.
How did this just become my opinion, Jimmy? You managed to avoid this whole conversation.
I'm just dodging the controversy, you know. I don't want to attract any hate, you know. It's dangerous out there on Twitter.
I welcome loads of hate. Be as hateful as you
send your hate to Jazza via Twitter, via the website rightdishonorable.com. leave us a review on iTunes, do all the good stuff.
Yeah, and reviews on iTunes help us out an awful lot, please do that. And also stars, they're nice too.
And we'll see you next week. Or listen. Bye. You'll listen to us next week.
Yeah, they'll do something next week. Okay. Yeah, well, great end, Jimmy, you did so well.
Bye.